Well, I'd call to order the Police Judicial and Legal Committee meeting of Mount Pleasant Town Council for December 6th, 2021. Good to see everybody, and our agenda has been published. Item number two is approval of minutes from the November 1st meeting. Do we have a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion and a second, any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, the minutes are approved. Item three is public comments. If you would like to make a public comment, please come to the lectern, give your name and address, and you will have 2 minutes. Please come forward.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Louisa Montgomery, 404 Church Street. I know I've spoken to you all before about this, and the only reason I'm here is not for police matter, but for the noise ordinance, and I know you know that's why I'm here. I'm glad that you're paying attention to it, and I really have to laugh. Park Circle is now catching it, and so is Folly Beach. So I wrote a letter to the editor of the Newsless Courier and told them I found it interesting that they were finally becoming aware of a problem we've been fighting for years, and that hopefully Town Hall will come to our rescue. So y'all do it right now.
Thank you, Louisa. Next, please.
I'm hooky, I'm sorry.
That's all right. hope you're getting better.
John Langley, 302 Bennett Street. I'm here to speak also about the decibel ordinance. Thank you, first of all, for revisiting this. It's been a source of unfortunate disharmony over the last few years, which didn't really need to be that. I'm here speaking specifically about mixed residential and commercial areas. I grew up in Mount Pleasant. I chose to live in a mixed area because that's the way it was growing up. In fact, my father had his first store on Pitt Street down in the residential section. But the mixed neighborhood requires compromise on both parts. We, as the homeowner, certainly compromise in terms of parking, in terms of noise, in terms of the endless trucks coming in and messing up traffic. And so I'm delighted you're reviewing this. But I do have three problems with it as it stands amended. The first is the allowed decibel level for a mixed neighborhood is 70. That's the average of 65 for neighborhoods and 75 for commercial. 70 decibels is too loud for a neighborhood. And this allowed decibel goes to 11 o'clock at night. Most municipalities our size, from my brief research, are more like 60 where homes are. The second thing that concerns me is there's a potential complication with the amplified noise. You set the maximum at 60 decibels for amplified noise. If you have a party going on with dishes and ice machines and people talking, and you have a decibel level of 65, that's allowed, but how can you prove that 60 of that comes from amplification? You can't. So any responding officer is put in a position of not being able to prove that the amplified noise is 60. It could be 58 and the other 7 being from the ambient noise of the party. So you put our responding officers, I think, in a very difficult position. It would be simpler and more easily enforceable if you set the absolute level at 60, whether it's from amplification, ambient noise, or whatever. Third thing is enforceability. We have to be sure that all responding officers have knowledge of how to use the decibelometer and also that they understand the ordinance. a $50 penalty is hardly enough to deter some of our larger restaurants and clubs. That's the price of a mediocre bottle of wine for most of them. So in summary, I think 60 decibels makes much more sense for any area that has residential homes nearby. You could set a 1 mile radius or whatever. But number two, this helps us with compromise. The homeowners compromise. It is now time for the commercial areas to compromise. This 60 decibel level is enforceable. It's fair. It's equal compromise on all parts. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Chris Coleman, 118 Pitt Street. I am here to support Mr. Langley's comments, which were better stated than anything I could do. As you know, I brought with me at the last town council meeting a table of noise ordinances from communities in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. The majority of those were between 55 and 60. And so I fully support a noise ordinance that lands in that range. You may hear people who argue for more, you may hear people for argue less, but that's what other people who are of like communities have done, and I suggest you follow them. I wanted to respond a little bit to the comment on penalty, which I hadn't last time, and that's correct. It's a $50 penalty. It will not deter anybody. So any part of this has to be a tiered system where if they get a second violation or a third violation, something really unpleasant happens because they need to do something. And finally, I wanted to support the comment that said it's not always amplified music. Sometimes it's a crowd. I did some research on that. A crowd of like 25 people turns out 70 decibels in noise. So in somebody's backyard butts up against the post house, they're getting 70 decibels in noise. And I'm pleased to tell you that the post house is actually going to do what you should do and put in some sort of sound deadening materials in there to capture it. So that goes to the point of obey the golden rule. If you wouldn't want to hear the noise you're making, take steps to abate it. And there are steps you can take. Bring in an audio engineer. Turn the amplifier down for Christmas sake. You're not killing off loud music. You're just killing off live music. You're killing off loud music by an ordinance like this. So I thank you all for your attention to it and bringing it back from the first reading at town council. I wish you well, and I will be here in any way I can to support you.
Thank you, Chris. Next, anyone?
Good afternoon. Carol Tinkey, 208 Venning Street. About the noise ordinance again. I've been reading lots of different noise ordinances, as I'm sure you have too. And so I just wrote down a few points of consideration. Many noise ordinances state that noise shall not significantly exceed the ambient noise. So we are at 208 Venning, which is directly across from the side entrance of the post house, and our ambient noise tends to be around 41. And so going from there to some of the suggested numbers is pretty extreme. Others talk about the proximity of noise to the place where someone sleeps. So the old village developed organically, and so a lot of the setbacks and lot lines are a little strange. Ours, just for your information, our property line is 35 feet from the post house property line, and our front bedroom is 45 feet from their property line, and that's where our grandchildren sleep. So we definitely have an interest in a quieter setting. Many ordinances call for prohibition of amplified sound if it can be heard from 50 feet away on public property or from the property line of private property. So that's pretty civilized. You know, noise, if you look at what the primary pollution is caused by humans, noise pollution is right up there. There's air pollution, water, noise, and soil. Those are the four tops. And I know we're all concerned with controlling the pollution in Shem Creek so that we can enjoy it for our recreation and our with good health. Noxious emissions from many sources get a lot of publicity and a lot of attention. The soil, safe food.
It's 2 minutes.
Okay. And the noise pollution causes stress, high blood pressure, sleep deprivation, and loss of productivity. Mount Pleasant, as it grows, it's imperative we establish ourselves as strong leaders in ensuring that quality of life issues are in the forefront of what we're known for, second to none. Thank you.
Thank you. Next. Yes, sir.
May I hand out something to y'all?
Hand it to the clerk down at the end, if you will.
I've got a copy for each of you.
All right, thank you.
Mike Tinkey, 208 Venning Street. You just met my bride. Thank you for addressing this, listening, and evaluating the noise ordinance based on our town being among the top 10 municipalities in handling this appropriately versus the bottom seven, which the original variance ordinance was. Please consider taking a little more time before moving the proposed ordinance forward. Number one, because if you look at CDC, EPA, World Health Organization, OSHA, and studies done by comparable municipalities around, you'll see that the noise ordinance are significantly lower than what is being proposed. In fact, 70 decibels also represent the upper level of EPA recommended 24-hour average noise level exposure. Even if not considered a dangerous level, proposed exposure to noise levels above 70 dB can still lead to hearing damage and hearing loss. Number two, conduct a noise study. We did that for the Crab Bank. Let's conduct a noise study and see what needs to be done and get a benchmark of where we are in the local areas. My wife mentioned we're in 40 to 45 in our area. 60 is too high. Number three, reconcile existing ordinances. The special events ordinances, the historic commission ordinances all have different amounts. So we need to reconcile those, and that would be better to do before we consider going forward. Three, in the materials you have the old ordinances. It's a lot more specific, and that's helpful as far as outlining types of noise beyond just amplified noise. And I've outlined my comments for every bit, page one, page three, page five of the existing ordinance in case I run out of time. Basically, what happens is this ordinance, if adopted, it goes later than the existing ordinance. It has more sound than the existing ordinance. It has no penalties of importance to the existing ordinance. In fact, it was proposed and brought to you by the business district. And so we as local residents would like to have the input to this to make sure at least it isn't worse than what we currently have, and ideally it's better.
Mike, that's just 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Public comment, anyone else? All right, thank you all very much. Item number four is police matters. There are no agenda items. Item five, judicial matters, employee years of recognition service. Please come forward.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Council, Committee, sorry. it's my pleasure this afternoon to recognize Amy Lockhart for 10 years of service with the town. Amy began her career on December 12, 2011, in the role of court clerk specialist. Her duties included assisting residents with court transactions, such as processing payments, as well as monitoring the completion of programs offered through the solicitor's office. It wasn't long before Amy transitioned to the role of court operations technician. In her role currently, Amy is responsible for the accuracy of all citations and warrants received by our department, which include traffic, criminal, parking, and code enforcement violations. Amy must review each charging document to ascertain all information, such as court date, charge, and penalties, are entered accurately into our court software. Amy is also responsible for notifying victims and witnesses of initial court dates as well as continuances. Prior to our department's implementing an electronic ticketing system, Amy manually entered approximately 14,000 citations per year. With our new process in place, Amy has been able to take on additional responsibilities, including training incoming police officers about all facets of the court process. This training helps prepare these young men and women for court. Amy, I appreciate all the work you do for our department. On behalf of the town, I congratulate you for 10 years of service.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I guess what's stunning is that a nice town like Mount Pleasant would have 14,000 offenses to it, and I'm impressed that you can enter that many. That's amazing. We need to work on getting that down a little bit, don't we? All right. This brings us to item number 6, legal matters. Thank you, Mr. Pagliarini. Item A is an ordinance to repeal and replace section 132.03, titled Noise of the Mount Pleasant Code of Ordinances. Did I get that right?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Mayor and Committee. Just a refresher on the status. This has been before the committee a few times prior and was on the council agenda. Obviously, we have some more issues to discuss as well as some new council member involvement. And we are back before you today to discuss some specifics related to this ordinance. What you have in front of you is a watermarked the December PJL version of the ordinance, and it does have some updated numbers and figures. As we have been doing the last few months, Mr. DeFord with the legal department has prepared the technical review, or excuse me, the technical components of the proposed ordinance. And where this would go from here is recommendations back to council for first reading, and then ultimately, if approved, to final reading with any amendments thereto. So that is the procedural status, and we're happy to answer any questions or start the conversation as you wish.
And for the record, and to remind everybody, and since we've had an election and all that stuff, we did not pass first reading. We deferred it to the committee. Yes.
Yes, sir.
All right. So just for the committee's sake, there's no time pressure on this. Remembering the words of now State Representative Joe Bustos, when you want it bad, you get it bad. There's, as we heard from our citizens, there are a lot of facets to this to talk about. And I know the chief wants to clear up, and I think we all want to clear up. If you see out there on social media, nobody is trying to stop outdoor music. Nobody. What we're trying to do is get it manageable that we can live with and protect our livability. But it's never even been considered that we would not have outdoor music. So let's settle that. All right. So who's coming up? Mac or?
Yes, sir.
All right, Mac.
Good afternoon, Mayor, council members. We do have a small presentation for you as well. You have that, Eric?
Yeah, should be up there at the
remote. Oh, okay. Okay. So the current ordinance, it is legally sufficient, but it can stand to have an objective criteria for determining if a noise violation occurs. And the most objective standard would be a decibel framework. And what we've proposed does a few things. First, it does that. It establishes a decibel framework for maximum decibel levels depending on if it's in a residential area or a commercial area. It employs noise measurement techniques for law enforcement officers to apply, so that will direct the officer, you know, where to take the actual measurement from. And we're also would be keeping in an unnecessary noise enforcement mechanism, which, if you go to page 4, sets forth a set of factors under D2. So this would be in addition to the decibel levels for situations where it may not be practical or it might be impossible to employ a decibel reader, or you might not be getting an accurate or discernible measurement of where the noise is coming from. Officers can still refer to these factors in determining if sound is unreasonably loud. And so be doing that. And then also we've included regulation for amplified sounds, anything above 60 decibels from the nearest residentially zoned area or property. And here's, just have a side on the basics of sound. I won't go through the definitions unless you all have any questions, but the biggest thing to take away from here is that according to the CDC, prolonged noise levels over 85 decibels is typically harmful, and then any kind of impulsive or intermittent noise above 115 decibels is also harmful. And here is a chart from the CDC. You see the under the decibel levels that we have proposed, 65 decibel would be the highest level for residential areas, and you see 60 decibels is the noise level for normal conversation. And then you also see 75 decibels for commercial, which is going to be a little bit lower than what you would hear if you're inside of your vehicle driving down the road on a highway. And I wanted to include some legal considerations. The biggest thing to take away from here is that when you're considering a decibel-based ordinance, if the levels are too low, the ordinance can be invalidated for being overbroad if it's too low to accomplish the interest that the town has in this case. And we have seen some examples where courts have struck down ordinances that are too low, that set forth too low of a decibel level.
Can you give us an idea of what those levels were?
There was a case, I think it was out of DC, I want to say it was 55 decibels. It was too low, and that was in National Park area, but you know, in the city of DC.
All right. I've got a quick question in the yellow highlights that we all have here. This is exceptions. This section shall not apply to the following sources. This is page 5 of 6. Emissions from any sound source on public rights of way. So does that mean, like folks on loud motorcycles or anything like that? Or is that trucks or is that construction equipment or?
That would.
Carl, not that everybody on a motorcycle is making a lot of loud noise, but I mean, I live real near Johnny Dodds and I hear some things that I know are more than 70 decibels and they're mufflers. They're probably not motorcycles either. But does that exempt any privately operated vehicle or is that any sound like if they were working on it? I didn't know what that means.
That exempts any noise source. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a vehicle, but any source that's coming from the actual roadway.
Okay, so it means any sound source on public rights of way.
Yes,
so a loud truck, a loud motorcycle, a car that is meant to make really loud noise is exempt when it's on the public right of way. Is that right?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. Is that a carryover from our other ordinance, or is this new, or what?
That was somewhat addressed, I believe, in our old ordinance, but that was more along the lines for construction. But this is just to contemplate, so for example, motorcycles, so that motorcycles, which are going to exceed any decibel level, that they're going to not fall under this in terms for enforcement on a roadway, so you can ride a motorcycle.
Okay. Because I mean, I know we don't anticipate somebody making a call, a police officer chasing down somebody that's doing 50 miles an hour and they're long gone. But if you live in a neighborhood and you have somebody with a really noisy vehicle of whatever type, and they consistently coming by at 5 a.m. or 11 p.m., you might want to be able to have some recourse. I mean, that can be as annoying as live music. So that's something I would want us to consider as a committee on that.
And I would just say with that, Mayor, that would be the law enforcement could look to, if you look on page 4, subsection D for that unnecessary noise prohibited. So law enforcement could look at that. Maybe they're not going to look towards the decibel levels, but perhaps we could, have that being applicable to noises coming from the roadway as well.
Unnecessary noise?
Yes, sir.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
So these cars that are making the crazy noises, I'm not a car person, they have modified their mufflers specifically to make more noise. Is that correct? Like the ones that are like that blast your eardrums as they go by? Is that something, and is that something that would fall under the noise ordinance? Is that something that could fall under our traffic laws? Like we ban modified mufflers in the town of Mount Pleasant? Like, I don't know how.
We could look and research that subject of mufflers that have been modified to be louder.
Because I feel like just like normal car noise, you can't have people calling the police all the time, because if normal car noise goes by, that would be constant. But if there are people who have modified their vehicles to be extra loud on purpose, and is it, but I guess would that fall under D, unnecessary noise prohibited?
We could have that fall under D. We could arrange it that way so that.
Or is it broad enough that it falls under there without it being explicit?
I'm sorry?
Is D1 broad enough? It's unlawful for any person to intentionally produce unnecessary noise. I mean, wouldn't a modified muffler fall under D1?
It would, but under the current exceptions, we would have to clarify that under 1I.
Right. And this ordinance as written is what is before us for first reading, right? So any modifications would have to be made on second reading. Or we
no man for
first reading. Oh, we have. Oh, that's right.
Right. So no first reading. So coming out of today, obviously, the committee can make whatever recommendations, go further to committee, or recommend something to council for first reading. So it's wide open as to changes and recommendations.
Okay. Thank you.
Good observation, if I may.
Yes, sir.
Well, with the muffler, I'm a car guy, obviously, and so I got some experience here. How are you going to determine, or how will we have our police determine that it was modified by the operator versus something purchased that was manufactured to sound that way legally?
Right.
And then you've got people, motorcycle, and you referenced me, yes, I ride, and you got a person who rides a motorcycle to and from work. They get up every morning at 6 o'clock to go to work, let's say. My neighbor does, actually, on his, comes back at 5. I hope we're not discussing that person would also fall under potentially being in trouble for having that particular mode of transportation to get to and from work. So I want us to just be very careful that we don't go down the wrong path here trying to target every little thing in this town.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, here's what I would see the nuisance. Take a motorcycle. You're sitting in your driveway just revving and revving over and over and over. That's a problem. That's where you look at your, in my opinion, your nuisance motorcycle versus the one that's driving down the road. You got 30 seconds of hearing as it passes and goes on traveling down the roadway. So I just want us to be careful not putting too much on our law enforcement or our legal team, finding a mechanic to then decide, was that a modified muffler? I mean, there's just some pieces here. Then I'll ask our attorneys, then do we get into a First Amendment issue sometime with these things? Charleston City, I don't know if they still have theirs. They had an ordinance at one time about the motorcycles coming down near the market. I don't know where it is now, but they had an ordinance in place. Well, I'm not sure if it was challenged, but just something to share with you. Just curious about. Thank you.
I agree. I for one, I mean, we're not in a big hurry to pass this, and we need to do it right. I would like to do something. Councilman Rambo and I talked about, I'd like to actually hear some decibel levels. I want to hear what 60 sounds like compared to 70. And then we've been having this conversation, several council members. If you had amplified music on one part of, let's say, town center, the nearest residences are 4 lanes or 5 lanes of traffic away. So 70 might be okay there, but at the post house in the old village, it's a totally different thing. You've got a bedroom 45 feet away. And so would it be legal for us to look at different zones for commercial? And that was one question I wanted to ask. I guess might clarify this when it mentioned over here, commercial, it mentioned whether it was commercial or residential, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So that meant that the source of the noise is commercial or residential?
That's correct, sir.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. But the problem we've got is noise coming from commercial that you hear on residential.
Right.
Yes.
Well, and one of the things that could be done potentially is there's neighborhood commercial zoning versus area-wide business zoning. So there could be, so you could make it more granular instead of just like an overarching commercially zoned property, you could divide it further, perhaps.
Right.
Possibly do that?
Yes, sir.
That'd be a good way to
legally, yes, sir. I think the question really is not a legal one. It is a question of application. And Chief Arnold is really the best person to answer that question as far as application and his officers out there on the scene. Mm-hmm. But we can do it. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I have a question on page 4, where we're blending one district versus another. What district would you consider Post House to be in?
Well, sir, that is commercial use. If we are going to divide or determine by use, we'd have to have a generalized commercial versus residential. And well, we would have to go through and apply the basic use for each. And that's, again, what lends to some of the complexity that I mentioned is you can have residential and commercial in certain areas that are right next to each other. And that's why that creates a problem.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at page 4 again, and the defining column says commercially zoned property.
Right.
The house next door to the post house, what is its zoning?
I don't know which one. There are many residential in that vicinity, but.
So would that be residentially zoned property?
Yes, sir.
And is Post House not in a residentially zoned property?
Well, it's use commercial. That's it.
Well, that's its use. What right. about zoned? What is it zoned?
Sir, commercially zoned property is a defined term or would be a defined term under this ordinance. So if you look on the first page, it says all properties situated in the non-residential use districts set forth in Chapter 156.304.
The post house is neighborhood commercial zoning.
Well, that's my point. I think maybe having separate commercial zones is the way to go. Because trying to average the two, I think, is part of the problem. Where we've got, as Mayor mentioned, a large commercial area on 17 in it's got residents on both sides, but it's a significant distance away. And I think that's the major problem we have. And I also want to get to the issue of the vehicles, because there are many instances near where I live on Mathis Ferry Road. You've got people coming out of a bar, if you will, on a motorcycle and revving the motorcycle up, and it's probably closer to 100 decibels. And so there should be some way to define that the driver of the vehicle makes a concerted effort there to rev their vehicle up to be heard. Something like that where it's reported. And you probably can't find it because vehicle's probably gone far enough they can't be found before the call goes in. So I'd like to have some way in which to register that in the ordinance.
So we can amend, we can look at some language under D on page 4, considering duration and nuisance value. Okay. I think that would address that.
Thank you.
And it seems like we've got some other questions. We're talking about differing decibel levels and different, I think zoning's a great, at least a good start, because that zoning already exists. The fine amounts we probably want to look at. And the other is the times. There was one comment that you get what you get to make noise later into the evening under this draft than you did under the old. What was the old? 10 p.m. instead of 11?
Nine.
And it goes to 11 on weekends, holidays.
All right. I don't think we're going to finish writing a good law today. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So I would like to, between now and our next meeting, maybe get a better idea of what these decibel levels sound like. Carl, you may be more familiar than some of us through having been in law enforcement, but you know, if somebody were to tell me the difference between 60 and 70, I wouldn't know at this point. I would have no clue. So I would like to get an idea of that. Let's look at the fines, let's look at the times, and then I think the best way to make a new law is slowly, and I think we can get this right. Yes, ma'am.
So I know that Councilman Eichel Fano has already gone out with someone from the police department and done a ride-along so that he can listen to the decibelage at different areas. So I've also talked to Chief Arnold about that, and I believe that's open to any council member who'd like to do a ride-along to actually hear what that sounds like on a Thursday night at the Post House or at Shem Creek.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
And for our attorney, Stenner, question for you guys, too. If there's already, and it's been a while since I've been in, writing tickets out there on the street, like our 56 codes, our motor vehicle codes, there's already a code that covers excessive noise or nuisance noise. Would we need that necessarily here if we already have a state law that allows us to enforce that? So I'd love to get the opinion of that.
Okay. Well, if the state law covers it regarding that muffler or excessive, no, sir, we would not. Obviously, you know as well as anyone that the officer could elect to utilize that particular law, so we may not need to cover it. However, we can have in our ordinance, as Mr. Chapman suggested, mm-hmm. language that would at least cover these unique situations or provide our officers a broad enough yet specific enough provision to utilize this ordinance as well.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
And I want to thank Legal. I think you're doing a great job of helping move this forward. And I think we all know what areas we'll work on, and we'll make sure this is on the agenda for next month.
Mayor, did you mention different commercial zones?
Yes.
Okay.
Different zones, fine amounts, the times of the music, the decibel levels, and then the motor vehicle issue.
Very good.
So we'll just put this on for next time. There'll be no first reading next Tuesday.
Yes, sir.
All right. Anything else on this one before we move on? All right, that's 6A. 6B is discussion and possible action regarding South Carolina House Bill H-4547 pertaining to short-term rentals. I think I know what that pre-filed bill attempts to do, but Mr. Pagliarini, why don't you give us an official legal briefing on that?
Yes, sir. This bill designated as proposed 6-1-90. I'll read it directly, Mayor. A governing body of a municipality, county, or other political subdivision of the state may not enact or enforce an ordinance, resolution, or regulation that prohibits the rental of a residential dwelling to a short-term guest. It is as broad as it sounds. So that is the pending bill, Mayor. And there are penalties such as a municipality that enacts such a prohibition would be unable to assess or collect 6% property tax assessment. And there are local government funds that would be inaccessible as well. So there you go. That is.
All right. Thank you.
So we'll get it up on the screen so everyone can see it.
I'll just add, I think everybody knows we spent, Ms. Reed, a year getting our ordinance, longer than a year.
It was almost 2 years, yes.
Longer than it takes to do a noise ordinance revision. And I think did good work. I don't think it was, this is my opinion, I don't think it was draconian. I think it protects neighborhoods while allowing those who operate them responsibly to do so. We've adjusted some things along the way. But I think, and Mr. Moore, I guess I'll ask you as staff, what are our options? You mentioned something about the Municipal Association. So I'm taking the assumption that this is of concern to this council. Okay.
Yes, sir. And the Municipal Association, we've been in contact. They understand that this is something not good for Mount Pleasant. And so they plan to oppose it. If the bill reaches the floor for a hearing, it's likely, sir, they may call you for to testify in front of the appropriate committee.
Okay. I did speak to Representative Bustos about this since he labored with y'all for 2 years to get that done. He let me know that he has fired some shots across some bows in Columbia and that he will be standing with Mount Pleasant on that. But we are talking about the State House in Columbia, and sometimes that can be a very scary thing. Yes, ma'am.
So I was wondering, is it possible to do a joint resolution with, say, Sullivan's Island, Isle of Palms? Because the most affected communities are going to be these low country communities that are big tourism draws. The reason that we put this ordinance in place is because we were concerned about characters of neighborhoods changing. Without these ordinances in place, it's going to completely change the character of our towns as investors come in, and you can make so much money on short-term rentals. I mean, Sullivan's Island has them banned entirely. It's going to completely change communities. I think that there's an opportunity to have to work with our neighboring municipalities and come together as a group and sort of strongly make a statement at the State House that, you know, this is going to severely impact our communities.
Of course it is. Answer to your question. And if it's your desire, Mr. Mayor, members of the committee, I'm happy to initiate that with the other communities, perhaps through their administrators, and see if there's an appetite there to do it. And we can draft something up on our end. I'll lean on Mr. Pagliarini for some language.
Yeah, I'll reach out to mayors as well, if y'all reach out to council members. And I have a question. What about, aren't we a home rule state? I mean, what are the limits that they, I mean, they could start micromanaging our recreation if they wanted to, you know?
Sir, we were fortunate enough to be at the Municipal Association seminar, legal seminar on Friday. And I believe that the words are similar, were pointed out that home rule came in the 70s and that was the extent of it. That was the last time home rule was ever discussed, and every movement since then has been to restrict home rule. And that is the way the Municipal Association looks at this, among many others. So.
Could we get a consensus of the committee? I don't think we need to vote on it. Could someone begin to draft for us what could be either just letters we send, probably a resolution, some facts, some figures, the wherefores and whys. Why did we do this? This may not be an issue in Oconee County or Cherokee County or Allendale, but it's an issue when you live on the coast. We're the one-off from the number one and number two rated, you know, tourist destination in America. And if they could buy a home in Mount Pleasant and be in the business, they would do that before they would try to build a hotel downtown. So could, I don't know if that would be you, David, or Eric, or somebody, just draft us some talking points and why this could be devastating to our community.
We will do that, Mayor.
Is the committee in agreement on that? Okay. Thank you very much. And also, we'll keep an eye. Did we hire our new lobbyist? Do we have a contract?
Not yet, sir. That's in development.
Okay.
But if I see where you're going with it, we can make sure that's one of the first things they deal with.
That would be a big priority, yes. Okay. Thank you. Anything else on that before we move on?
Yes, sir.
All right. Item C is discussion with regard to a referendum. I just made up a word. Referendum for recreation projects.
If I may, while she's getting set up.
Yes.
So I asked for this to be on the agenda, and I also asked for it to be on the agenda for recreation. And for me, the reason I wanted it on PJL is because ultimately it will be our committee that will finalize the language of this referendum before it goes on the ballot. Timing on this would be, it'd have to be completed before August 2022 to be on the fall ballot. And this is really important for our community because our budget basically covers our basic needs, our police, fire, and public services. But in order for us to achieve these major capital projects, we can't do it without significant funding, and I don't see an easy funding source for that. But allowing the citizens of Mount Pleasant to make a choice as to what they want to do as far as whether or not something is accomplished in the next 10 years or the next 50. I think we should give our citizens that choice.
Good afternoon. Nice lead-in.
And may I make one point? I believe what we saw this morning was it would be first reading in June, second reading in July, and to be ready for any referendum, be ready in August. Is that right?
Yes, sir. That is on this presentation, but from a timeline standpoint, August 10th is our 90-day deadline to file the referendum questions with the Board of Elections.
Great. Thank you.
The first thing we look at is the legal debt limit. It is in the Constitution, and it says counties and municipalities cannot, without the voters, go more than 8% of their assessed property value. So when we look at that, we look at our assessed property value estimated at $1.1 billion. So the 8% state mandate or limit would be $88.7 million. Currently, our outstanding debt that does apply to this is $56.6 million. So if town council directed, they could go out without going to a referendum and borrow just over $32 million.
Yes, ma'am.
Can I clarify, though, that would be borrowing without a funding source, which would mean we would have to raise taxes to pay that debt service?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so it's not free money?
No, ma'am. It would require a funding source to pay back the debt service.
Okay. Thank you.
If you did do a referendum,
yes, thank you. And ma'am, as you mentioned earlier, really the items and that would come before this committee, other than the overall feasibility of the referendum, are the specific requirements. And those are on this slide. You'll see conditions and restrictions on the use of tax revenue, the maximum cost of the respective projects, detail, and essentially ranking each one to provide a hierarchy in how funds are going to be spent. We do need to be very specific as to the allocation for each project with a specific description, along with a tax sunset date. So we'll need a time as well as the end period of that. So those are all required to be in there. It would require whether this committee or our recreation committee or a combination of committees to determine the hierarchy, along with finance to determine respective budgets. So that would be the cooperation among committees. And as mentioned prior, the dates are on this slide as well, all pointing towards Tuesday, November 8th, 2022 election.
So getting to that funding part, if there was not another funding source and you chose to use millage to fund this, this is what it would look like. We used a $500,000 home as the appraised or market value. The 4% ratio is the creates the assessment, and 4% is residential. So for a house, the assessed value is $20,000. You add our current, in the first column, our current millage of 39.3, and that is operating and debt combined. The tax gross tax bill is $786. When you look at the local option sales tax credit, which is the current amount, it does reduce the bills by $140. So that $500,000 appraised home pays a tax bill to the town for operating in debt of $646. So if I add one mill to the millage rate, you can see the same calculation, and that it ends up $20 difference for each mill.
For each mill, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So when I look at debt service examples to pay back, I just use $25 million, $50 million, and $100 million. The interest rate really comes into play when it goes longer, but it doesn't matter if you're doing 25 or 100. It's only if you're using a smaller amount that you might have a slightly higher interest rate. And these rates are recent and projected out to 23. So the debt service on a $25 million borrowing for at 2% for 10 years, the debt service repayments just under $2.8 million. That would be about 2.7 mils as we generate just at $1 million per mil. And so that home would pay additional $54 a year.
For 10 years only?
For 10 years only, yes, ma'am. And
can you say that one more time on where'd the million come from?
So that's not on here, but when we run when we take our $1 billion assessed value and we run it through the collection rate and the homestead exemption, what it generates when I use the combined debt and operating mills, is just over $1 million per mill in money it generates. So that's why the 2.8, it's just under for 2.7 for millage increase requirements.
Okay.
And then for that $500,000 home, it's $54 a year. We did reach out to the county to see what our most recent average residential value is, and it is up. We did have the reassessment. So just last week, it's we're at $543,520 is our average residential home value.
Is that the midpoint?
The average.
Average?
Yes, sir. 543,520.
Single family residential, obviously.
Yes, sir. Detached.
Just making sure. Right. So when my question would be for municipalities that do this, do they start with the number they think they could raise what's palatable, or do they start with a needs list and add that up and say, how much of this do we, I mean, there's two ways to go for it. Set the budget and then fit stuff, or find the stuff and then see what your budget is. So what do others do? Mm-hmm. Everybody's looking like, yeah, who wants to answer this?
I've been involved in 5 referendums.
Okay.
3 for Carter, 1 for parking, 1 for building the Visitor Reception Transportation Center. It's a combination of both.
Okay.
You want to know, you want to make sure you get enough money to do the project, but you also want to make sure, if you're going to do it, that you have a reasonable chance of getting it passed. The other issue is the language of the referendum to make sure that the public doesn't feel they're getting hoodwinked, so to speak. You've got to be specific, and it's got to be specific enough to pass the test of going to the state Supreme Court. Because if you don't, you could end up in court for one disgruntled person and lose. So you've got to put all that together, but it's got to be specific. It's got to be very specific. And not only the language of what you're doing has to be specific, but the language of the projects and the detailed amount. Now, how much detail? We've got to make that determination. But in the 5 referendums that I was involved in, 3 passed and 2 failed for one reason or another. So all of that has to be taken into account.
And we had a referendum in, was it 15?
Yes, sir.
Well,
yeah.
Which way, I know it failed, but I don't know what the percentages were.
I don't recollect the percentages, Mayor, but that was at least some of the feedback was about specificity. As Mr. Chapman mentioned.
Right. Is there any option other than property tax that we have? Is there a local option sales tax, or is that only for counties? And the reason I say that, I'm just looking at the realm of possibilities. But I think one thing I heard on the local option sales tax is all these 5 million tourists a year coming in help pay that. You're the only one paying your residential property tax. You don't get any help with that. So are there other funding options?
So the 1 cent sales tax, that is only counties, municipalities can't have part of those. There are TIF districts, there's MID, Municipal Improvement Development. Mm-hmm. They all come with uniqueness. If you wanted to do another TIF district, it would
have. They're still property tax base, right? Yeah.
Yes. A MID would be on a specific area, but if it's an owner-occupied dwelling, you'd have to have their personal approval per home. So it's more difficult in a residential area, maybe impossible, but in a commercial area you could. But you know, we're limited in our amount, so then it's kind of like, where do you want to send the money to, and what the taxes, but I can't think of any other ideas.
TIFs, we used to be able to impose, the county and the school district come into it and contribute.
Right.
We can't do that unilaterally anymore. Chances are they wouldn't.
Do it anyway, right?
So it won't generate any money. MIDS, for some of the projects we're talking about, they're in residential areas, so you'd have to get their approval, and that's very awkward. MIDS are like, if you're in a downtown commercial center that needs something unique, then sometimes it can make sense, but not for these projects.
Not a broad reaching all over the community.
That's right, sir. And this is why, too, some of our recreation facility needs have a hard time competing for money or getting funded because there just aren't a lot of sources that you can put towards them. Transportation projects get more help. The impact fee helps to fund a good portion of those projects. Stormwater has a fee attached to it. Recreation's tough.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
So we also received at the Recreation Committee, they had kind of a capital project overview listing out kind of the major projects and how much funding they have, what the missing funding is, or if some are completely unfunded. And it totals up without counting the Mount Pleasant Way, because the Mount Pleasant Way, even though we have Greenbelt funds to buy the bike paths, it's $60 million to convert those into actual paths. So without the Mount Pleasant Way on there at all, it is $70 million. In order to fund all of our unfunded capital projects in the recreation department. I personally think that is a little asking too much of our citizens, but I think asking someone who's paying, you know, to pay an extra $100 a year for 10 years and you get all these things. We are a world-class town that deserves world-class facilities, and we just don't have the budget to reach it. But giving our citizens the opportunity to see for $100 a year on your $500,000 home, or $200 a year on your million-dollar home, or more than that on your $5 million waterfront home with a deep water dock. But if you have a $5 million home, you can afford it. But if we do this and give our citizens the opportunity to vote and give them specific projects that are all over town, that we can show that focuses on ball fields and the arts and seniors and gives a little piece to everyone, and some of our projects that need, like our comprehensive repair. We, like, for example, the Jones Center doesn't have air conditioning or like good locker rooms and those kinds of things. Either you get it or you're not going to get it, and it's going to be us sort of scraping by and hoping that we can put a little bit money aside every year, and it's maybe 10 years or 20 years before we get to something. For the Mount Pleasant Way, it might not be in some of our lifetimes before it's completed. So by putting a referendum on the ballot that is specific, narrow, clear, focused, it's a 10-year sunsetting provision, and asking and making it clear to the public that it would be an extra, I mean, that's why I was thinking around $40 million, $100 a year on your $500,000 home for 10 years, and that's it. And then we get to borrow it right away and kick off all these things and build out our world-class town. And so I've asked at the rec committee that they recommend to PJL what this priority should be and that kind of thing and what should go on there. But I know that full council will have to make that ultimate decision of what is in the piece. But I think deciding on the dollar amount, and I've spoken to council members who want $100 million referendum, which I don't think will pass personally, and then people who want $20 million, which to me is almost not worth it at this, because it would, you'd be able to do like a few minor things. So I think somewhere in between, we've got to find a happy medium.
So are we through with Ms. Kotoff on the money standpoint? Okay. Because it's very clear that the recreation or health, recreation and events committee would have to come up with the details. That's not our purview. Our purview would be the actual legal wording that A, engenders public understanding, whether they support it or not, but B, has to pass legal muster, right?
Yes, sir.
Because we'd be held legally accountable for that.
That is correct.
Okay. So from this standpoint, I guess we just sort of tuck this in the back of our head and then let it go
through rec.
Right.
Yes, sir. There are many ways it can be done, obviously, but if there is a council vote at least to move forward, that can be done coming out of committee, not an ordinance, but a council vote to generally move forward and have the various committees, specifically our rec committee and its potential new name, to come back and bring an ordinance to council that would simultaneously run through this committee for the language.
Okay. All right.
So I move to recommend to full council for next Tuesday that we continue work towards a referendum for fall of 2022 for recreation.
We have a motion.
Second.
And a second. Any discussion?
Yes, sir. I got one thing to add.
Sure.
Mount Pleasant Way, has got a lot of different ways, excuse the pun, to fund it with road projects that we have going on. One of those is the Highway 41 improvements. Highway 41 improvements will give us the northern tier of Mount Pleasant Way, from the Wando Bridge all the way to US 17. And combined with what we're doing with Isle of Palms Connector, what we're doing with Rifle Range Road, what we're doing with, trying to think of the other one, but anyhow, I think Mount Pleasant Way, because of its all-encompassing area, we can do things without going to a referendum. We can get things done without going to a referendum on that. So I, when that question comes up, I think we have an answer.
Okay. All right. Any other before we vote? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. So we will make that recommendation to full council. That concludes item C. Item D is discussion and possible action related to standing committee title changes and composition. One of these is, and Mr. Paglini, I don't know if there's something to pop up on the screen or just as a discussion item.
Yes, sir, there is, if I was smart enough. There are two committees, Mayor, I believe, that were looking at potential changes for name that have been proposed, and those are our current Water Supply Committee and our current Recreation Committee. And on here, you'll see we've just put up some two proposed ordinance just so you can see what it looks like. The first is an ordinance to amend to a Committee on Recreation to change it. And you'll see the language in here to see if I can get it down.
Is that the existing ordinance or?
No, sir. This would be the proposed ordinance for the new version. There we go. I got it. There you go, sir. So it would be Department Health, Recreation, and Events.
For the committee, not the department.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
This would be the committee change, and you'll see these are our standing committees, and obviously they're in our ordinances, so the titles would need to be changed accordingly.
Right.
And there is also water supply, so this would be an example of the water supply. It would look the same, sir, and so we would just need amendments to those titles.
Okay, so it would be making recreation, health, recreation, and events, and water supply would be water supply / water resources. And the reason for that is background, I think I've told you all before, is the state law that enables a council member, and I guess the mayor as well, to be ex officio voting members at Waterworks. It says water supply. So, and as Jake will tell you in his 2 years, and he's done an outstanding job, I will say, and Waterworks feels the same way. It is more comprehensive than just the supply of water that we have. It's surface water, it's groundwater, it's septic tanks, it's water quality, it's all of those issues, and I think water resources would be a much better comprehensive thing. As for recreation, we keep recreation in there, but we've got to address health, and our events are huge. And I saw there's Nicole over there. I was asking Steve the other day, the department head, if you can tell me another municipality that has at least five big, and I'm not even talking about the farmers market, five big single day events as we have. And Carl, from your law enforcement standpoint, the bridge run, the blessing of the fleet, the Christmas parade, the Children's Day, Sweetgrass Festival, and I'm leaving a few out, but those are huge. So I just felt, and I didn't, staff didn't propose this or anything. This kind of came, you know, it was just out of my head. Ran it by a few of y'all and got a good response. So if somebody would make a motion that we adopt this, we'll be in discussion.
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Now we're in discussion. Ms. Whitley.
No, I think it's okay. Fine.
All right.
If I may.
Yes, sir.
You know, when this was first brought up, you know, think about how amazing our recreation department is. I mean, second to none. And I can say that from the working relationship I was with the police department, had with them. And we have so much more that goes on in there in recreation, so much. We have the teens, but we also have the therapeutic rec. I think about the mental health, physical health. It goes on. The different type of offerings we have at the senior center are the swimming. There's so many things that go into health, in my opinion. And if you watch anything in the National News, the NFL, any of our sports teams, there's really a push to get the young people out there playing 60 or whatever it is. And why is that? It's not become a better athlete, it's to become more healthy. Mm-hmm. So I think it's appropriate to title it as such. And I think there's already programs in place that our recreation department is doing that addresses the health issues of not just our young people, but our seniors as well, and even in the middle there. And then you mentioned that the events, since I've been here 32 years at the town, obviously 8.5 years as the chief, almost every year it seems like we had an event, be quite honest with you. And I know Nicole and her folks and the recreation staff have had to turn events away. There's so many, they want to have events here for many reasons. In the amazing recreation department, police department, fire, public works. You tell me any other municipality or county entity that provides the services that we do. And so that's why I'm supporting that. And I could go on and on about our amazing recreation department, but that's why.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
And just to add to what Councilmember Ritchie said, the medical university is a perfect example. The medical university has a huge gym recreation facility. Do they call it a recreation facility, a recreation department, or whatever? They call it a wellness center. And so that's the new recreation, wellness or health, because let's face it, the more active you are, the better your health is. So that's why I'm supporting it.
Great. All right. All in favor of the motion to approve what we call suggested change to the ordinance, whatever. All right. The suggested change, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Motion passes. Did that take care of the other? Were we talking about adding one extra person to that committee?
No, sir. That does not. But the language is written that you can consider changes to standing title, changes and composition. So if the committee wishes to discuss that.
I was thinking that was included. Was that not the idea to have four people on that committee? If not, we'll just leave it like it is. I didn't know if someone had made a request that we put that on there. That was my concern as the committee chair. If not, we'll move on.
I don't know.
Okay. All right, nothing. We're good.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it. If it's me, I'm just kidding.
No, I was under the impression that a council member had asked that we put an item on there to change it to four, and I thought it was you. But if it wasn't you, then I'm mistaken. Won't be the first time I'm mistaken. So. All right. Item E is executive session for a contractual matter related to contract for the town's general counsel. This is just a timing thing. There's nothing intriguing going on. That will be coming up as we move forward this year, and this was requested by a council member. So if we have a motion to go into...
But before we do that, yes. I want to make sure we have completed the work on the standing committee, because we talked a lot about recreation and being wellness. Did we do something for water supply and resources committee?
That was in the ordinance change.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. You will see at council next week.
As long as the attorney is satisfied, right. I'm satisfied.
Okay. All right. Do we have a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of discussing contractual matter for the town's general counsel?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Before we vote, the committee may take action on any item, including any subsection of any section listed on an executive session agenda or discussed in an executive session during a properly noticed meeting. All in favor of entering executive session for the reason stated, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We will go to executive session.
Courtroom.
Thank you. In the cozy courtroom.
All right.
My time limit is up.
That's my pick up the children.
Oh my gosh. No action was taken. Do not anticipate any motions or any discussion to follow. So there being nothing before this committee, that completes our agenda. Make sure I read the back. Yep. Got it all?
Mm-hmm.
And if there's nothing else from the committee, we will stand adjourned.
Sir.
Thank you.
Moving right along.